But first, why one expert on militant Islam is very nervous.
I fear that a lot of what we're doing is in the guise of either retaliating or punishing the people who did this specific act. But I fear that what we're facing right now could very quickly evolve into a world war, and it can involve substantial American deaths on home turf.
Anthropologist Cynthia Mahmood is one of a handful of Western scholars who've actually sat down and talked with Islamic terrorists. She says reading the Quran won't give you much insight into Osama bin Laden's admirers because their anger is rooted in politics, not religion. As Mahmood told Steve Paulson, to understand this culture, you have to see it on its home ground.
You need to be on what's been called the Arab street. You need to talk to regular people, and you need to go to local mosques where the mullahs or the imams are preaching a version of Islam that may not be the Quranic version. It may not be what experts and scholars find to be a valid interpretation of Islam. But it's the culture of the street that has spawned Osama bin Laden and others of his ilk. And that's what we need to study.
I want to talk some about your work as an anthropologist in some of these countries. You've talked with militant Muslims who've committed what we would call terrorist acts. And I'm wondering if you can tell me what they're like.
Yes, I have done that. That's my specialization as an anthropologist. I study religion and violence. I visited guerrilla camps in the mountains of Pakistan, which fighters were training for the jihad both in Afghanistan and in Kashmir, which is being fought over between India and Pakistan. When I visited their guerrilla camps, I usually would try to go and perform some sort of service to build trust, first of all. For example, the very first time I went, I volunteered in a field hospital where wounded fighters were being treated for quite a while and became eventually accepted in the role of caregiver to them. And I started hearing some of their stories, and only gradually I would broach the topic of, would it be all right if we write this down, and would it be all right if I publish it and if I analyze it and write about you? A couple of the stories that I heard from people, often very young boys, by the way, include things like one of them had set off a bomb in an urban neighborhood, not a military target, had set off a bomb in an urban neighborhood and had set off three other bombs in different locations so that if people ran away from the first bomb, they would be caught by the second. And if they ran away from the second, they would be caught by the third, and so on.
This sounds horrifying.
It's horrifying, and even more horrifying to me was the fact that this militant had used children on bicycles to bring the bombs into the neighborhood, hidden in grocery packets, without telling the children exactly what they were doing. It put them at great risk and, of course, made them ethically complicit in this, you know, horrible act.
What did you say to this person? Did you tell him that you found this abhorrent?
Yes. I mean, of course, it is a very intense personal experience to be sitting, literally having tea with a person who is telling very calmly about this abomination. But I'm always very honest with them because I don't want to later have them feel that I betrayed them by writing my opinions about them in the press or something. And in this case, as he's telling me the story, I just said, you know, I've got to tell you how horrified I am to be sitting here hearing this. And what possible reason can you give why it was justified to kill civilians? And, you know, in fact, the reason that particular individual gave was that his religious community had suffered torture, had suffered oppression. They had been publicly taunted by people in that neighborhood. And he felt, you know, that that gave him somehow the, you know, certainly the anger, if not the justification, as a way of communicating back very publicly, nope, you can't keep us down.
Have you talked to anyone else who's done anything like this?
Well, if I may just add one thing, in that same case, there were other fighters sitting around listening as he was telling this, and I also turned to the others, and I said, you know, do you guys condemn this? Do you think this is a legitimate thing to set off a bomb in a neighborhood, no matter how much that individual had suffered torture or his community had suffered? And they all immediately said, no, no, that's unjustifiable. You can hit a military target or even a police target, an agent of the state, but setting off a bomb in a neighborhood is never allowable. And then I said to them, well, why don't you guys publicly condemn what he did then? I mean, why don't you stand up and say, we're throwing you out of our group because this is not allowable? And in fact, they very sadly said to me, well, we can't do that because he's our brother and he's a hero and he's very brave and he was trying his best and mistakes get made.
Any other kinds of stories
I have
like
heard
this?
So many. Let me tell a slightly different angle on one. This was from a young kid, maybe 13 or 14, no beard or anything. He, in fact, was in this hospital way up in the mountains between India and Pakistan. And he told the story of how when he was growing up in Kashmir, at one point security forces came to his home. They burned down the house and they killed the people and they tied his sister up to a post in the basement and they repeatedly raped her and shouted all kinds of insults and so on. And the boy's grandfather was forced to watch this entire episode. And the grandfather was so humiliated by having had to witness his inability to protect the granddaughter that he took out an axe and killed the granddaughter to save the family honor. You know, how can we hear this stuff? But this is what happened. And the grandfather, an old, old guy, partially crippled, started climbing up these mountains with the young boy to join the Mujahideen to fight back for their dignity. Well, of course, he couldn't even make it up the mountains at all. They had to turn him back, and about 30, 34 other young kids had joined them, and they said, "Don't worry, grandfather, you go back home with relatives, and we will do the fighting for you, and we will die to redeem your family's honor." They struggled up this path. A couple of them got shot on the way by security forces. Others of them died from being frozen to death on these high mountain passes. Others of them fell off cliffs. When they got finally across to the guerrilla training camp, there was only four of them left, and this young man was one of them. He had severe frostbite. He's laying there in the hospital bed, and he was obviously filled with fierce determination now that all these sacrifices had been made, and it's now up to him and three other 13-year-olds to go back and fight and redeem the honor of the whole place. And then while he's laying there telling this, and obviously he's going to be capable of the most horrific deeds, I think. Then he kind of reached toward my hand and he said, "Auntie," he called me Auntie, he said, "Auntie, can you please get a message to my grandfather back in India?" Because he said, "I know that you BBC," I'm not with the BBC, but that's what they've heard of. And he said, "I know you BBC people have connections, and please tell my grandpa that I'm still alive and I'm all right."
So it's not as if these are cold-blooded people. They're filled with rage for one reason or another.
That's right. Here's a little kid, basically with tears in his eyes. He's going to get up out of that bed and be given the most, you know, advanced weapons, automatic rifles, surface to air, everything. He'll get the training. He'll get the weapons. Now, he doesn't know anything about politics. He doesn't probably never heard of Israel and Palestine. You know, he doesn't know about the treaty problems over Kashmir or anything. It's just for him a question of redeeming his family honor, and he's willing to die for it.
I would think for the kind of research that you do, going out into some rather forbidding places and hanging out with some people who've done some horrific things would be dangerous. Have you ever felt in danger?
Yes. I mean, normally I feel quite welcomed among militants. For one thing, I respect religion in general terms, and they notice this. I respect their culture. For example, with Muslims, I always keep my head covered with the traditional head covering, the hijab, and I respect the local norms and customs. I have always been treated with great respect as a professor, as a woman, you know, as someone interested in learning about the struggle. I've never felt scared in that kind of a way among militants. But I have had a few moments that were quite intense, such as one time after the Gulf War, I was with a group at a camp, and suddenly one of them just turned to me and pointed his AK-47 straight at me. In fact, nudged me in the chest with the end of it, and he suddenly shouted, "You know, we love Saddam Hussein, USA, no!" Out of the blue, basically. Hmm. And I just kind of stood there in shock, and other people were around us, also heavily armed. And everyone just stood there for about a minute waiting to see what would happen. And eventually I did diffuse the situation, really, by responding not defensively but with utter calm and saying to the person, you know, "I'm also critical of some of the things that happened in the Gulf War, and why don't we sit down and talk about it?" And he just stood there and looked at me, and I looked at him, and everyone waited. But eventually he put the gun down, and in fact, we did sit down and talk. And after the talk, we prayed, and we did the Muslim prayer, and they saw that I was wearing a cross at that time around my neck, and they touched the cross, and I took this to mean, whether rightly or wrongly, but I took this gesture to mean now we had prayed their way, and perhaps they wanted to defer and pray in my way. Anyway, I kneeled down, and I showed our prayer gesture, and they immediately kneeled down with me.
My sense is that there are not that many Western scholars who do this kind of field work, especially talking with militants out there.
Not really. There aren't too many. We've tended to study these things from a distance, and my own field of anthropology is one where we believe in hands-on research. But, you know, particularly in the field of terrorism studies, there's been a taboo on actually knowing the subjects of our study.
And really? So the people who we tend to see on TV who were labeled terrorism experts, they haven't actually talked to terrorists?
Most have not. It would be a rarity to find a counterterrorism expert who actually has known terrorists face-to-face. Certainly, prominent figures in the field of terrorism studies have said publicly that the call to understanding terrorists is tantamount to condoning terrorism. And I think I'm appalled to hear that, really, because what other academic field can you think of where the leaders in the field say that purposeful ignorance of the subject is a good thing?
Cynthia Mahmood is an anthropologist at the University of Notre Dame. She talked with Steve Paulson.